Evening, folks. Welcome, everybody, to the Big Footy Tiger Cast Monday Night Live show. Hope you're all doing very, very well from wherever you are around the globe. I say globe because we've had people tuning in from Scotland, watching the live watch-alongs with us in Thailand and all kinds of places. So it's good fun. Good to see Dave's already slapped EJ and I for the event of today, which I'm sure we'll get to after. But I've got Grok with me tonight. How are you, mate?
Yeah, going well, mate. I'm alive, for those who were wondering last week. Yeah, I'm alive. I'm around. Had a few injuries and just work and stuff, but no, good to be back.
Very good, very good. I'm not sure CB was an outside chance to join us tonight. EJ's busy. Wednesday night, though, folks, I should be doing the team selection night with Tiggs. I think Tiggs is going to jump on for a one-on-one chat and give us a bit of an update on how he's going too, so keep an eye out for that on the Wednesday. But Grok and I are going to steer the ship for tonight, along with all of you in... Oh, no, has he really?
That's me personally, not a player.
Oh, sorry, I paused mid-sentence as soon as I saw that. Oh, gosh, what a start. Like we do most weeks, we do talk about the North Melbourne death ride chart. Now, I didn't actually have time today to update the chart, but I'm just jumping on the ladder now. I don't think it's changed at all, though. No, we're still at the same point in time. The Kangaroos are still 17th on the ladder, which still gives us pick two and our very own pick three. They obviously lost to the Pies. They actually kept it closer, but didn't they, Grok? They were kind of hanging about, and I thought, oh, God, they're going to get the job done here, but then the Pies pulled away, which was good to see.
Yeah, good to see for us. They pulled away in the last quarter. I think, much like us, the Kangaroos just ran out of puff in the last quarter. Collingwood got the roll on and just ended up with a pretty comfortable win in the end.
And they've got the bye this week, the Kangas, and then they come up against the Eagles straight off the bat. So that'll be a big test in Bunbury. So that's not really a gimme then, is it?
Yeah, that's going to be a fascinating watch, obviously, all around, because, again, both of those sides, they've got a massive impact on our overall finishing position as well. So not just the death ride for North, but also, West Coast and possibly getting a win there. I do think the Kangas will get up in that one. But it's going to be fascinating, a cripple fight.
It could be a live show. We wrote that RSC. It could be a live death ride for sure. Cam, we'll answer this one quickly, but then we're going to loop back to the Harley Reid stuff later. But essentially, yes, you are right. If they were to trade Harley Reid hypothetically to us for picks two and three, and if they do get the big compensation pick for Oscar Allen, then yes, they could end up with 1, 2, 3, and 4 in theory. But we'll loop back to Harley Reid shortly because there's a little bit of an update on that front as well, which has made things very, very interesting. But we'll jump straight.
Travis, our practice game against the Eagles was at Mineral Resources Park. It was their home base.
Yes, that's their training ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mineral Resources. So, right, well, we'll get stuck into the Essendon game of the AFL variety first, then we'll touch on the VFL after. But Essendon defeated Richmond 11-15-81 to 8-10-58 by 23 points. It was an interesting game, Grok, wasn't it? I mean, the first three quarters, I thought we showed some positive signs. We hit the lead at various stages. We just couldn't seem to kick back-to-back goals to extend the lead at any point in time. But even at three-quarter time, we were only 12 points down. And then obviously got blown out of the water a little bit, I won't say too much, in the last quarter. But for all the commentary around the game about maybe how much we fell away in the last quarter, I still walked away feeling like I said a bit more about Essendon only being able to break us in the last quarter off a five-day break with the plays we had out than it did anything else. So I actually thought, all things considered, we weren't so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you nailed it there. We'll take more out of that game than I think Essendon will. Given the situation, the five-day break, obviously no Bolter, no Lynch. The forward line, essentially a bunch of nobodies. And to be in the game for three quarters is a massive achievement. And I don't think it's fair for the criticism that Uze's copped. for the game and some of the moves that he made. I just think, you know, this time last year, without Bolt or without Lynch, that was probably an 80-point loss. You can see there's been definite improvement in all areas of the ground this year. There's clear direction now with ball movement. You can see the intensity. You can see what they're trying to do with the tackling pressure. I think the main difference for me was just the finishing inside 50, like just the being able to convert scores. Again, with a young forward line, obviously you've got two first-year players in Sims and Fall really being your two main targets. It was going to be a lot of work was going to be left up to the smalls to hit the scoreboard, the smalls and the midfielders, and we got belted in the midfield in the clearances. And the smalls weren't really impactful on the scoreboard either. Like Seth Campbell had his quietest game for the year. Steely Green was quiet. Morris, when he came on, did some nice things but didn't hit the scoreboard. Mansell, again, quiet. So, yeah, I think we left too much to too little in regards to offensive capabilities. And, again, it's up to the young side. It's a young side. These things are going to happen. But, yeah, there were still some positive signs out of it, not to be blown away.
I think all of us probably going into that game, once we knew what the lineup was looking like, I think we all kind of anticipated that the hardest part of the game for us was going to be scoring. So like our three key position players in Fall, Sims, and I mean, essentially Lawler was the other key position player, had 17 games combined between them. And that's where I still stand by this. And I know not everyone agrees with it. I still feel like that Jacob Blight would have been a good inclusion in that forward line, just for a bit more maturity, a bit more of a bigger body, some slightly more experience running and jumping at the ball. Wouldn't have marked everything necessarily, but I think he could have shouldered a bit more of the load a bit better than they were going to be able to. I just kind of think we missed a bit of a trick there to try and give ourselves a better chance to score. But look, it took Mackay and Reid long enough to try and get themselves into the game, and we had plenty of chances. And to a few people's comments in here, that we really should have been up by three or four goals at halftime. Like we actually were quite dominant territory-wise, but unfortunately we just couldn't convert it into scoreboard pressure. Now, you mentioned clearances, and to me that was the biggest downside for me, aside from Sam Lawler and Thompson Dow for obvious reasons, was the clearances. We lost at 45-23, which is an absolute smashing. We lost the tackles 75-54, which I'm not so cut up about, because you can't expect to roll out 92 tackles each week. That's not going to happen. But it was the only two tackles inside 50 that was a bit of a concern for me. And it kind of goes back to your point about the small forwards all having pretty sort of off games at the same time again, which has happened before.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the game plan where, and they made a comment about it on the game during, with the commentators, where they mentioned that a lot of our smalls push up the ground in terms of pressuring and everything. And what that means is when we get the turnover and we go long, they're out of position. They're not in position for the crumb. So a lot of the times, especially with the young forward line, obviously Sims and Fall, Trainer was up there as well at various points as well. For the young blokes, when they aren't contesting, they get outbodied. Obviously they got outbodied by Mackay and everything. So it's just intercept mark and release out the back as well. And they get caught in between. They're not in the right position for defensive transition, but they're not, you know, in the right position to offensively pressure either. So I think there needs to be a little bit of work with Chris Newman about how our forwards are setting up in both areas of that, especially when we do win the ball. But yeah, I think there needs to be some tweaks with our midfield as well. I thought the main shining light for me there was McAuliffe. I think he really was the one who showed us what being able to win a ball looks like. He looked like he was the only one there of our midfields that was genuinely winning the ball. Whenever it was there to be won, or at least halving it. Whereas Hopper and Taranto, as good of a season as they've had, they got absolutely torched on the outside when they didn't win the ball, whereas Kane was able to run both ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple of iffy efforts from Taranto with not chasing it. It could have just been cooked after the big game the week before as well, which I would completely understand. Before we look at some individual players, Mark raised a question. I thought of an interesting answer that maybe some people don't necessarily know about or remember the comments surrounding it, but about like the 450 entries, is that a midfield coaching thing or something that comes with time? So it definitely will come with time, but I wanted to more address the midfield coaching thing because I'm not sure if people remember, but Uza actually mentioned a little while ago that Jack Zeeble, who was meant to be our midfield coach, is actually not our midfield coach at the moment. So we're currently running with one less line coach because they felt the resources were better spent putting Zeeble into a developmental coach role, given the sheer amount of youngsters we've got coming through. And because of the soft cap restraints, I don't think we've replaced that midfield role. They just kind of spread that load across, like your Blake Carousellas, for example, is doing, I guess, ball movement and maybe doubles in that as well. So to kind of answer that question in a roundabout way, we don't actually have a fully fledged midfield coach at the moment because of what we decided to do with Zeeble instead. So it would be interesting to see how things maybe change next year or into the next couple of years when we sort of bring a full-time midfield coach back on board. But I just thought that was an interesting point to raise on that front.
And I think that sort of ties in with the observation of the small forwards pushing up. Obviously, we're going slow and long. Perhaps it's maybe to allow them time to actually get back into a position to at least half the contest or get in around and lock the ball if the ball goes in long, as opposed to going quick and getting outmarked and it coming straight back out super quickly. Because I know we were all frustrated watching the game Friday night with the long ball movement and slow, you know, taking the mark 60 out, and then instead of going quickly, waiting until the ump calls play on and then kicking it exactly to where it should have gone 10 seconds earlier. I think that's part and parcel of the problem is we're having to wait to have more numbers around the ball rather than kicking to a contest.
Yeah, it's a lot of that happening. RFC Senators put about Taranto copped on a fairly. He's been absolutely spent. He's been asked to do everything. Now, I don't disagree with that. What I would then say is then why aren't we adding other midfielders into the rotation mix so he's not asked to do everything for every minute of every game? The fact that he and Hopper have attended almost quite literally every centre bounce, like not far off, is staggering to me. And I think it almost does them more harm than good. Like I can appreciate that they're good midfielders, but surely the workload, Grok, to have two players bearing that much of the load can't be a healthy thing for them in such a long season.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the why we had, you know, Camden roll through there as well, another big body. But you've got players like McAuliffe who could have been playing, you know, 6 weeks earlier if Taranto and Hopper were a little banged up, a little sore. You've got Sonzi who hasn't played in there but's been smashing it at VFL level. We've got options there. You know, Mansell and Seth can rotate there through more game time. Sammy Lawler, who is out for a few weeks now, but, you know, a lot of us have been calling for him to get more midfield time because when we're getting smashed out of the middle and he's starving up forward because the ball's not getting there, what's that doing for his development? Like, there have been, there's quite a few options that haven't been explored. So, like, yes, they're probably, you know, could have been players rotating through, but that's also on the coaches who aren't identifying that, or if they have identified it, they aren't rectifying it.
You mentioned Trainer playing up forward before. Now, that was something that did pique my interest very early in the game. What did you make of it? I've seen a lot of people be a little bit up in arms about it. I fully understand that it was very situational just because of the makeup. Like missing Tom Lynch, having to throw a few magnets around. I thought it added a nice string to his bow. Like, I knew he could play forward because of in the champs he did it and kicked a goal after the siren and whatnot. I don't think it's something we'll see often, though, do you reckon, Grok? I reckon he looks more comfortable down back.
I honestly reckon it's part of them preparing for when Gibkiss comes back. I think those two will be the two that rotate and switch backwards and forwards because they both have that ability to go forward. The one thing that I don't like is if you were going to play Trainer forward, why not Blight instead? He would have offered more as a forward than what Trainer did. Like, Trainer competed, yes, but when you've got, you know, Tom Sims in his third game and you've got Jonty Fall in his seventh or eighth, I would much rather have had Trainer stay down back and then have either Kaczynski or Blight bigger bodied forward, more experienced forward.
And Campbell Gray, I thought he was very, very good again in his second game of AFL. I tell you what, if you were to watch that game for the first time, you would not at all suspect he was a second gamer, much like a lot of our other players. But I feel like that he showed, like we've seen a lot of our newcomers as a forward, but as a defender, he showed some great composure and poise, made the right decisions, loves a big thumping spoil. I thought he was super, and I would love to have him stay in the team almost at all costs. I know that's a big call, but he looked so good down there.
Absolutely. He was very impressive. Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to be another one that needs to play consistently. You've seen that he offers us something. Defensively, he was great. His kicking was pretty good for a big bloke, which is a little bit of a difference to Blight in that way. Blight has often let himself down kicking-wise. Yeah, I think Gray is definitely one that that competes well and will offer us. I can see him taking broad spot long-term as that taller-ish third-type defender.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Possibly. I can definitely see that happening. I really like him. And a few people have just pointed out that he's yet to lose a one-on-one defensive contest. So that's now he and Miller who have really good stats in that category.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's no secret that we've felt for a while that our defence has probably been our strongest part of the ground. I know we've had a couple of games that have blown out, but I think we've more identified that being to do with the midfield and wing and half forward pressure rather than the actual defenders. So that's a credit to them and being able to keep their stuff together. They've done a pretty good job. Speaking of Ben Miller, I mentioned him before. I thought he didn't get the credit he probably deserved for that game as well. Like, I know we lost and it sucks, but I thought him and probably the back line in its entirety, Broad and Vlossen had really good games as well.
Yeah, our back line did really, really well, especially over the past few weeks where we've been torched through the middle and the ball's coming in quickly from clearances straight out of the middle. They've handled it well. Obviously, they've essentially been putting a Band-Aid over a gunshot wound. They've done extremely well to hold a lot of the forwards. It goes back to the mentality of whole ground defense that Dimmer instilled. While the defenders have done really well, especially without Bolter, it comes back to, again, the midfield putting that defensive transition in, setting up properly for the contest, because we saw it last year, we've seen it in a couple of games this year, where if our midfield aren't competitive in if they're not winning the ball and they're not shutting down the space for the opposition mids when they win the ball, we get opened up and our defense, as well as it stands up, will get scored against. So again, it comes back to probably the back 66% of the ground. That's where a lot of the defense needs to be on point. The forward half is great when we've got possession. When we don't, it's the mids and the backs that are the ones that really need to be on point.
Now, I know we just said that the core defenders, I guess we'd call them, did play a good role. The one player who kind of got found out a little bit defensively, although offensively I thought this guy had a good game, Hugo Railsmith had the 17 disposals, 2 goals, 4 tackles, but he got exposed a few times on the youngster from Essendon on his debut, didn't he? And I just felt like we didn't maybe adapt quick enough to make sure he wasn't in that position or to help cover, although you probably should be backing in a Hugo to win that physical one-on-one battle with another winger. What did you make of Hugo's game? It was a bit Taylor two halves in some ways for him.
Yeah, I definitely think he embodied a lot of our players in that he was solid when the game was there to be taken on, But when Essendon were the ones with momentum, he sort of wilted under the pressure. Absolutely got exposed by Clark. So it's disappointing, especially given he's been in the system now for a little while. I think Hugo's one of these players that you're not going to really worry too much about his defensive frailties because of what he does offensively. He's very...
Just take the good with the bad?
Yeah, again, you got to do it. Like, he's going to offer you, like, two goals, you take it, fantastic. But, like, if his man kicks three, it's a bit of a break-even. I think the main criticism coming Hugo's way for that game is because it was against the first gamer. If it had been against a player with 100 games, he'd be like, yeah, okay, like, solid player. But against the first gamer, it's like... That really shouldn't happen.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you. I'm okay to take the good with the bad because he's good whilst a little bit chaotic at times. Does offer some good speed, breaks the lines, gets the ball moving forward quickly, and I think that's important for us. Morris Rioli, he's probably the other one that polarised a lot of people. Came on as sub late in the game, four disposals, one tackle, one mark. I thought he did a couple of nice pressure acts early. I think he forced a couple of Essendon players to kick it out in the full just from his harassing. And then he had like a 1v3 situation on the front part of the wing towards Essendon's end where he chased down a few players, but then kind of didn't do much else after that. I'm thinking we're all wanting more. Where is he at? Where do you see Morris at?
I see him. I still think he's best 23 in that, in terms of pressure and creativity, he's probably second best in that area behind Seth Campbell. I think he offers us more than Steely Green does. The one thing with Morris is I think he takes on too much and tries to do too much. He had a couple of almost moments on Friday where he got a handball away and it got smothered, but if we had got it, we were in the clear. And the run on the wing with the ball, he just overran it, and we were in on goal there. So if those two moments go his way, he's directly involved in two goal assists and his game looks a lot better. He's a 50-50 player where a lot of the good things he does come from the result of him winning 50-50s through pressure or the inferred pressure that he brings. He can be creative, but again, he can also do some things that make you scratch your head that players of his experience now shouldn't be doing. He makes the easy look hard a lot of the time. But again, I do think he's our number one pressure player. As much as, you know, we've got Campbell, we've got Green, we've got Mansell, none of them have that aura that MJ does when he's on the ground. You can see when he's running at players, they panic, whereas you don't see that with a lot of the other small forwards that we have. So I do think we need to get that right. And yeah, I agree, Morris needs to work on his fitness a little bit. But part of that comes from getting games in. He's not going to improve his fitness throughout the season if he's not playing at AFL level. So I think it's up to the coaches to get the best out of him, rev him up. And I don't think he comes on as sub. I think that was the wrong game, especially with the rain. A sub didn't allow him to get that space with his pace and his acceleration. I just think, yeah, he should have started if that was the case.
And Sam Banks, tell you what, this is now the third game in a row he's put in a really, really good effort. 29 disposals, 8 marks, 2 tackles, 608 metres gain, which was leading the way for us. I'm not sure if it was the highest for the entire game or not, but... He's put together 3 quality weeks of football on the half-back line. And I know there's still little bits and pieces he's got to tweak and adjust and with the balance between defending and attacking and things like that. But it's hard not to be impressed by how he's adapted to the role in the absence of Jaden Short.
Yeah, I think that answers the question now of who's going to replace Rioli. We've got one in Banks. Obviously, he's probably not going to be as defensively sound pressure-wise as what Dan was, but yeah, he's had a ripping ripping month nearly. Getting the ball, he's hitting targets, which is nice. He's winning the ball as well. He's not just finding it, but he's winning it, which was one of the main concerns that a lot of people had with Banks was, is he just that the outside type runner, or can he win his own ball when the contest is there? And he's doing that. I think he's starting to know what his limitations are. He's not trying to take on too much. He's not trying to do those 60-meter runs down the wing. He's, okay, I've got the ball. I'm going to hand it off, or I'm going to do the 30-meter kick upfield. He's playing within himself, and he's being rewarded for it. So, yeah, he's actually had a ripper few weeks.
So where does this leave Jaden Short? I don't want to mention the conspiracy I put forward, but he's going to be finding it awfully difficult to get back into that half-back spot. I mean, you couldn't, as a logical thinking person, you couldn't possibly put him in and move Sam Banks somewhere else. If he's coming back in, it's got to be on the other half-back flank. And I don't know whether we want to give that up from Tom Brown, if we want him to develop further. I'm not sure. But if Shorty comes back in what might be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, where's the spot for him?
I honestly don't think there is a spot for him. I've been on record on the forum saying that I don't think Short should have been best 22 last year, especially once we knew that Rioli was going or likely to go. I thought that was the perfect chance to start resetting, especially once we had all those picks in the draft, to say, all right, we're resetting now. We'll, obviously, Banks, we've got Juddy Clark coming through who can play off the half-back line, play off the wing. You've got Hugo who can play in that game. I just thought if we were really going to reset and refresh like what Uze wanted, like what we've been told, it's a reset, we're rebuilding. I just don't see what Short has offered us over the past 18 months that a couple of the younger players are not going to be offering us in 12 months, 18 months with some game time and development, because Short, his kicking's dropped off. He's not hitting the targets. Now a lot of his kicks are long, high to no one in particular. He's never been great with pressure. He's panicked. He's panicking a lot more with the ball in hand now. Yeah. And even his meters gain stat has dropped significantly, especially over the last 18 months, 2 years. Yeah, so I really just don't see the impact that he has on games being worth coming into the best 22 for.
I'd be prepared to try him wing half forward, something like that. I definitely, you can't possibly chuck him back on the half back line with what we've got going at the moment. Like we said a little while ago, that before Banks kind of come on, that the club had highly regarded Sam Banks and were very bullish about how good he was going to be from his draft crop. And this, I think it's now starting to show why they were backing him in as much as they were. But yeah, I'm happy to try and find another spot for Shorty, because I think mixing it up and making it fun again for him could reignite him. And I think he's got enough credits in the bank to deserve that type of chance. But then I suppose it's the balance of it not being at the expense of someone else. I mean, we're going to talk about the VFL in a second, and the first name that pops to mind for me is Judson Clark, who I think is very, very, very close to coming back into the senior side. And he's probably going to be another one who could play off the wing half forward or half back. So then again, that's another person he's fighting against to get a spot from.
Yeah, the only spot I can see for Short will have to be as a forward, where his kicking has dropped, but maybe it's still good enough to find targets that we're missing from others delivering inside 50. And we know what Short's like from around 50 at goal as well. So I think he's going to offer us more in terms of contributing in the front half of the ground now, in the latter stages of his career, than what he will as a defender, especially with the players coming through.
Yeah, no, I think so as well. Well, speaking of the VFL, we'll jump into that quickly, because that was a nice little win for the Tigers there. 10-14-74 to 7-10-52 by 22 points down at Frankston. I'm just laughing because of thinking back to Juddy Clark's set shot that went about 35 metres to the left because the wind got a hold of it, like 100%. A golf slice or a hook shot. It was crazy. I'm sure we'll get used to it at some stage being down there. But it will come as no surprise to anybody that Tyler Sonzi smashed it again. 37 disposals, 7 marks, 8 tackles, 4 clearances. Jacob Blight, I think, was actually awarded best on ground. 26 disposals, 9 marks. James Trezise, 21 disposals. Sorry, Sonzi got a goal as well, as did Trezise. I shouldn't forget about that. Dion Prestia, first game back, 20 disposals, 1 goal, a little cheeky one out the back, which was nice. 3 marks, 2 tackles, 4 clearances. Got through the game pretty well. I like how they spread it out a bit more over 4 quarters, to be honest. I thought that was a much better bit of planning. Hayes Brown, 18 disposals, 28 hitouts, 6 clearances. He's come along all right, the big man. And Juddy Clark, I'll stop there just for the moment, but Juddy Clark, 17 disposals, 8 marks, 1 tackle, 1 clearance. Juddy Clark, he has a laser boot. Some of those kicks he was putting across the field or inboard to McKelty Lefau, absolute laser beams. And I think I probably even myself forgot how quick he was across the ground. He is edging very, very close to selection.
Yeah, he was the one that really stood out. His kicking in those conditions where players were, you know, underestimating the wind or, you know, distance-wise, he was nailing players on the chest 40, 50 metres away. I think he was the one who adapted to conditions more than any player on the ground. For his disposal. Other than that shot at goal that he had, I had to have a laugh. 30 out and it ends up 15 meters out on the full from directly in front is nuts. Crazy. It was ridiculous. The only time I've seen wind like that is the only other oval I've seen wind like that at is at Williamstown. The wind there. It can be pretty brutal as well. But, yeah, Juddy Clark, I think, is definitely going to be another one that Uze is going to be wrapped to work with. You know, pacey, good skills, can hit the scoreboard, can tackle, can find the ball, can win the ball. He's a bit of a jack-of-all-trades, master of none, but he's going to be a very, very good player.
And what did you make of Dion Prestia's return? I thought it was workmanlike for me, and I know it's not a great comparison because I'm talking about a first-year player and a veteran, but seeing what he was doing at the VFL level is kind of what I was hoping Smiley was going to do at the VFL level, just coast around with these, get his disposals, make it look really easy and simple. But I thought Dion, he was probably quiet in the first quarter and then really got into the game. Didn't really do anything damaging, I guess, bar the goal, but he was doing the right things. So the question then becomes, is that enough to come back into the senior side this week, or does he need to do another couple of games in the VFL from a match fitness perspective?
I'd give him in the VFL until after the bye. The reason why I do that is we've seen the pattern over the last 2 or 3 years with Dion, where he'll play, you know, 1 or 2 games in the VFL, he'll come in and he'll play 1 game at AFL level and he'll break down and he'll be out for another 3 or 4 weeks. I just think he needs to get continuous footy without the pressure and rigors of AFL level football. I had it in my mind, RFC. That's why I said breakdown. I think that we can't trust him to come into AFL level without, you know, something happening to him. So until he can prove to us that his body's right, I'd much rather him playing at VFL level where it's not a significant impact on our bench rotations in the AFL level if he was to go down with some things.
I'll do another week or so as well just to be safe.
Give him another 2 weeks.
You
know, against the Giants, against the Swans. And then he's got the bye, and then he can come in after that.
I mean, to be fair, RFC, he'd be on the plane regardless because our VFL team's playing just before the AFL team. So I'm not sure we should read into that too much because he was on the plane no matter what, just based on where that game's fixtured. Now, my man, Jasper Elgar, I did tip him for 4 goals. We only got the 2. Could have had 3, but he had 13 disposals, 3 marks. I'm probably being biased. I'm probably at the point of no return. I'm very committed to this cause, so forgive me. But he's got to be close. He's got to be close. Plays tall, plays small. I know his time will come eventually. And I suppose in my mind, I'm just trying to work out, would he offer more currently in the senior side than what Steely Green's outputting? I know Steely probably does a lot more pressure acts than maybe what Jasper would do, but are we at a point now where we need to try and actually hit the scoreboard a bit more to keep ourselves in games or chances to win games as opposed to the pressure? Like, do we need to remix up and try and find balance?
I don't think we can play Steely and MJ in the same side. They're both predominantly pressure forwards, first and foremost. But yep. I think that MJ has more offensive weapons in terms of like scoreboard impact and going through the middle. So if he was to come in, it would be for Green, in my opinion, and I think he should be coming in. I think he definitely deserves the call-up over the past few weeks. And so what? He doesn't pressure, he doesn't chase as much as the other small forwards. He's a genuine scoreboard threat, which is what we're lacking. If, you know, he presents really, really well. He's crafty, he's nimble, like, is exactly what we're missing in that forward line. Our forward line right now is very vanilla, very, you know, one note, get the ball in, it's either Remark or we take the shot from 50. There's no in between. Why not have another player who can, you know, win the ball on the ground or take a mark overhead? I don't see what we've got to lose.
Yeah, I'm with you. We'll touch on some of the other players quickly. Tyler Young, first game back, I thought did a really nice job. 12 disposals, 3 marks, 1 tackle. He'll be much better for the run. Liam Force at the tap, 12 disposals. He got 1 goal, 1, 8 hitouts. Good to see him doing a little bit of ruck work as well. So that's something, I suppose, to keep up your sleeve for the future. Jacob Bauer, 9 disposals, 2 tackles, 4 marks. Honestly, had an average 3 quarters and had a really good last quarter. But the other one who's probably in line to come in is McKelty Lefau, who had 2 goals, 8 disposals, 4 marks, 2 tackles. One of the tackles, he absolutely smashed the bloke from about 25 metres away. It was very NRL, Melbourne yep. Storm type areas. It was very, very good to see. I'm tempted to play McKelty Lefau this week, but I would also understand why you would want to give him another week in the VFL, similar reasons to the Prestia scenario. Obviously, McKelty's coming off a longer recovery. I nearly said the word, a longer recovery. So maybe needs a bit more match fitness. I just think having that extra senior, like big body in there is going to help us tremendously.
Yeah, I do think Lefau plays at some point this year. I just think coming off, you know, that significant layoff that he had, and even then he'd only played, what, 6 or 7 games at AFL level prior to going down. I think he's best playing another couple of weeks in the VFL.
I think it depends on, for me, it'll hugely depend on Tom Lynch. If he isn't available, I would pull the trigger on the McKelty coming into play this week. I just don't think we can expose, to RFC's point, we can't expose Jonty and Sims again with no proper, genuine, big body backup to shoulder the load. It's not fair on them. And GWS are far more proficient defensively than what Essendon are. And they will torch us even more than what we think they might. If we don't have a big body down there. So if Lynch doesn't get up, I would have to strongly consider Lefau coming in, would be the only caveat. Otherwise, I'm okay for another BFL stint.
Yeah, that's a good point, Paul. Why rush Lefau when we can bring Blight in?
I agree with that too, but they don't seem to want to do that. I agree wholeheartedly.
Is insane. I don't know what Blight has done, but yeah, it's insane to me that he isn't playing at senior level.
Yeah, I think he's showing that he's too good for VFL level. And I suppose the problem we've got by bringing in a Blight, a Lefau, whoever it might be, it is going to be at the expense of one of the younger kids. So it's again trying to find that balance of you've got to, you want to develop the kids and get games into them, but at the same time you sort of want to also be structurally competitive and sound as well. And maybe it's not working as well as we want, having two youngsters, if it's two experienced and one youngster, but then you sort of prolong how long it takes to get games into them. It's a real body juggling act, isn't it? Like, I'm not sure what the right answer is, but I guess it becomes frustrating when you end up in games that you feel like you could have won, and that could have been the decisive piece of the puzzle with selection.
Yeah. I think, and as much as I love him, he's my boy, I think based on what I saw on Friday, and granted the conditions weren't great, but Jonty's starting to look tired.
And they will, no, they'll naturally get tired for sure.
And yeah, some of the efforts that he had weren't up to the standards that he had. His leading patterns were a little bit off. He looked slow. He looked a little sore. He wasn't pressuring with intent like he normally does. So yeah, I could probably see changes coming there as well. I think Jonty's had a pretty good stint now. I would like to see Fawcett come in again. I think Fawcett's. Mm-hmm. I think Fawcett was a little stiff to be dropped after his only game against Port in round two. Yep. I'd like to see him at AFL level, but if not, I would like to see Lafau or Blight in.
Yeah, agree. We'll whip through the fitness report. I'm going to do my very best not to stuff this up. So Tom Lynch, concussion test. So hopefully he gets through that because we obviously need him. Kalina, knee test, so he could be back as well. I've actually enjoyed Fawcett's ruck work, so that might end sooner than we think. Jaden Short, calf, 1 to 2 weeks. That hasn't really progressed. It's probably actually gotten worse, if anything. Sam Lawler, hamstring, 4 to 6 weeks. Bit of a bummer. I mean, it was shit out seeing him go down after I know he only had the two disposals, but two kicks, two goals. He was on great pace. And look, we've got the buy-in there as well. I feel like they're going to be ultra-conservative given it was already a pre-existing concern coming to the club. So I think that's how they're going to manage. I'm thinking my way through this every step of the way. Thompson, Dow, Patella, 6 to 8 weeks. Now, that is a painful thing to have happen to you. I can tell you from personal experience. That one's an interesting one. Like, what's that?
It's funny because Serple on the report said likely 8 to 10 for Dow.
So, where Ed, I'm not wanting to shit on the kid because I've loved his work this year, but is that edging really close to long-term list or inactive list for a mid-season pick? Like, that would be on the cusp for my mind.
Yeah, that's why I said before we went on that could be season done for Dow, based on what Serple was saying. He said 8 to 10 for Dow because it was a dislocated knee, and he said 3 games for Lawler that he'll miss.
Yeah, okay, so I don't know if there's a cutoff for teams to submit a thing for the mid-season draft. If there's not, that is a genuine out, and it sucks because I've really loved what Thompson Dow's done this year, and he's been seriously improved no matter what people say, and it's just really terrible timing. But that could be an option. Then rounding it out with Taj Houghton and Josh Gibkiss still tracking well. Taj is 4 to 7 weeks, Gibkiss 5 to 8 weeks. So they'll be training with a non-contact hat very, very soon, which is going to be awesome. And Harry Armstrong, 6 to 8 weeks. Smiley, still TBC. It very much just seems like it's a getting in shape and fitness perspective rather than anything else. It seems like the hammy itself's coming along fine. They're just wanting to get him in better physical condition before unleashing him again.
Yeah. The one positive to come out of Dow's situation, I had to think carefully there, is this all but guarantees that McAuliffe is going to play extended football now. Based on the role that Dow's played at AFL level, that's the role that we're probably going to peg McAuliffe for now.
Yeah. Yeah, so and to a lesser extent, it gives Sonzi a chance too, potentially, to get some actual bloody centre bounce minutes where he deserves to play.
100%.
Oh my gosh, what a disaster that is. All right, well, that is the fitness report. I think we actually got through that unscathed, Grok, so well done to us. No one can blame us for anything that happens from this week onwards. Before we go into the preview of the GWS game, I do want to give a very quick update, and it's good that you're on because you can help add to this. The Harley Reid update. Now, I got a message today, and what I love that people out there who watch our show feel comfortable enough to message bits and pieces that they hear as well through different avenues. And, you know, you do a little bit of digging and you try and see how valid it all is. And a lot of it sometimes checks out. And this is sort of, I feel like it's one of those times. But the message I got today from someone who knows someone in the industry, I know that sounds like my friend's uncle's best friend's dog, sister's auntie, but you get the picture, that apparently with the Harley Reid race, it's down to three clubs and we're allegedly one of them. So I then double check this with Grok, because I know you've been hot on this as well. And you're led to believe that it is up down to three teams, us, Geelong, and the Bombers. Is that, that's right? That's what you're hearing too?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that Essendon aren't really in the picture. It's just those three clubs are the three that are probably the three that are most likely to land him. From what I'm hearing, it's us or Geelong that are the main two. For Essendon, they're really just throwing a lot of cash at him. They're still not sold on a lot of the culture there and everything like that. Whereas we've got a decent culture, very family oriented. He's got some close friends there in Sammy Lawler and a couple of the others. We're in a really strong position. It also ties in a little bit with the Cody Walker situation, where if we do get a commitment that Cody would like to come to us, we're more likely to offer one of the picks this year and a future first next year, so we don't have to use the future first on Walker next year. That's the plan for the picks. If in an ideal, you know, sunshine and lollipops world, we give up one of the picks this year and one next year for Reid, and we get Cody Walker for a bunch of, you know, picks in the 20s and 30s at the end of next year's draft.
Yeah, exactly right. And worst case, if Walker does pick Carlton, there's still Tanner Armstrong is going to be a potential top 15 pick, and we've got Jack Leese as well with father son. This, Damien, this is the interesting part for me, this year or next year piece. Now, I'm not fully across what currency Geelong have this year, so I might be completely wrong with this, what I'm about to say. So someone please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But I always felt like the Geelong play was more if he was going to go there next year. I didn't think they could satisfy a trade as well as we could this year, although Harley might say he wants to go to Geelong and therefore it kind of offsets that anyway. But my take was that if he wants to go this year, that we would be in a red hot seat ahead of most others, because we've got the currency to pay him and we've also got the currency to pay West Coast. So it kind of ticks all the major boxes if we can convince him that we're a good club of choice to fit him.
Yeah, Geelong is more likely next year. They haven't got the trade capital to satisfy West Coast for any trade for them. Next year, obviously, they're going to have, you know, danger off the books. They'll have a few more players. They'll have money for the salary cap there. For us, it's we're the ones that have got capital. We've obviously got two first rounders this year and we've got one next year as well. So we've got more leeway to offer trades for West Coast, plus whatever players we trade at the end of the year if we do, and what picks we come back. So, yeah, we definitely we're probably number one in terms of who West Coast would like to deal with for Reid.
Yeah, it just then comes down to us being able to convince Harley. To Nick's point, I agree that I think we're selling the list profile. We're selling coming through as a young core group who's got a lot of promise. I think, like, as frustrating as these losses are as supporters watching from the inside, I think from the outside looking in, a lot of people are really respective. And I'm not going to say in awe, but they're loving the fact that we're not just rolling over, that we're actually making a fist of most games. And I think that's a really important part as well, because we're obviously very young, very inexperienced. So that it speaks for itself. But the fact we're not getting belted every week, I think is also a good bit too. On the Cody Walker thing quickly, I've seen a few comments. It's not as done as what people think. I've heard from so many different people in different places that we are massively wrapping our arms around Cody Walker. And it's not as over the line to Carlton as I think what everyone believes. Not saying he's going to pick us 100% at all, but I don't think it's a certainty to Carlton either at this point in time, because you've heard bits on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just back on Reed, we're also selling support for him. Obviously, one of the biggest things for Reed right now is he feels like he's not being supported by his teammates, especially when he's being targeted by fans and opposition players. Quite often you see him getting into niggles where the opposition player's getting into him and no one's going to him. No one's, you know, getting around him, getting into the opposition players, where we're offering that. Obviously, we've got Mansell, who's a fiery character, you know, Hopper and Taranto and Nank. Like, these are all players.
Lawler. They're in there pulling people off other players and having a crack, jump a punch and doing the works. Yeah.
So we're selling that we won't stand by and watch him being, you know, scrummed and mauled and really just targeted. And that's the biggest reason that he's not very happy at West Coast, is he just feels like he was seen as this great white hope and all of a sudden there's just no support for him, and that's why he's lashing out as well. But yeah, Cody Walker, from what I'm hearing, there are significant concerns from him and Andrew that Carlton aren't exactly the best place for young players right now, given the culture. There have been quite a few players now. Obviously, Ollie Hollins has now taken his second leave of absence from the club for personal reasons, mental health. Harry Mackay has also taken leave from the club for mental health reasons. The Walkers are really concerned about the nature of the club and what that could potentially do to young players, young impressionable players. So they're really wanting to see a change in that regard. At least that's what I'm hearing. And that's why we're still in with a massive chance. We're not giving up on Cody.
And to Mark's point, that Carlton are going to be potentially declining as Tassie come in, they were going to pillage all the draft picks. So it could be a complete basket case by the time this all plays out. So anyway, we're not promising anything, but it's just that it's not as done and dusted as people may seem. Harry says, Dylan Alexander's a fan of something in particular we said, or us in general. We're a fan of Dylan as well. We're actually working with him to do a bit of a draft type show at some stage as well. So I think Dylan's on Pommy's show tonight, but yeah, we're looking to get Dylan later on. I think Cody is a Carlton supporter by default, which you can understand. But interesting times.
And I can just imagine us being able to sell to Cody. We've got Sammy Lawler, we've got Harley Reid, you know, we've got Harry Armstrong, Jasper Elgar. Like, we've got these cool, like, if we land Harley Reid, that would go a long way to getting us Cody Walker as well.
That would be huge. Before we jump onto the preview for the GWS game, good call here from Cameron. Just a little mini quick update on Callaway and Archie Daffy. So Louis Callaway played in the South Australia versus New South Wales under 18 trial game on the week just gone. So that's kind of the preview to the champs. So he played alongside Dyson Sharp and he did really, really well. He was named as one of the best players on the ground. It didn't actually have the disposals written in anywhere, but by the video clips that I took, it's about 25 touches. He would have to have had about 10 or 11 clearances, a lot by handball. He was feeding Dyson Sharp quite a bit. They're actually a really good 1-2 punch and would be something I would be happy to look forward to in the many years to come. He also, I should have brought the clip if I had enough time. He executed one of the best Falcons I've ever seen, and I laughed so hard while watching it. The kitty hits okay. But I put up the video of his highlights of Louis Callaway. Go and watch it on the YouTube channel. It's at about the 4-minute mark. There's an epic Falcon, one of the best you'll ever see in your life. But anyway, Louis's doing really, really well for himself. He's possibly making it more difficult for us because I think his draft stock's increasing. And Archie Daffy, so Nick Daffy's dad sent us through some video footage of his game for Geelong College in the APS, which was pretty cool because that's really hard to find. So I chucked it up as well. He had 25 disposals, kicked a goal. Loves to get the ball on boot, does young Archie, but takes a very strong mark as well. And yeah, so he's due for father-son next year, along with Jack Leese, who didn't play in the week just gone. So I'm not sure if he was on other duties of some kind, but I didn't see any stats for him. But no, it's good to see that we've got some players coming through. And obviously we've got Tanner Armstrong as well. So yes, things start to turn a little bit more in our favour over the next couple of years, Grok.
Actually, yeah, before I touch on that, while we're talking about, you know, future father-sons and everything, did anyone see the proposal from one of the Tassie reps about wanting access to father-daughters for Tasmanian-born
players?
Yes,
I did see that, yes.
What an absolute laughable concept. Like, yeah, like, I would be pissed if we lost Richo and Jack's daughters. Like, just, yeah. Be just our luck that they would bring it in, and like all of our, you know, Tassie born players, they've all had daughters. Like, but yeah, I think
then we lose access anyway.
Yeah, we're looking pretty pretty comfortable in terms of father sons over the next couple of years, which is nice because we haven't really had much success in that regard. Obviously, Paddy Naish was the last one who was serviceable. I wouldn't say he was great. He did a couple of nice things, but outside of Bowden and Richo, we haven't really struck gold. Whereas you sit there and you look at Geelong, you look at Collingwood, who have struck gold, Bulldogs as well. It's just like, when's it our turn? Like, please come on.
We're due for it for sure. So plenty to keep an eye out for. But yeah, check out the videos on the YouTube channel. All right, let's get stuck into very quickly the upcoming GWS game. We've got the Giants over in Sydney, which is going to be a bloody tough ask. There's no two ways about it. Let's talk about the ins and outs first, Grok. Obviously, some force changes will be Sammy Lawler out, Thompson Dow out. I would assume Samson Ryan's probably out if Nankervis is coming in. Lynch, we hope, is back in. Who else? What other changes can you foresee happening? Who else is coming in? Who else might be going out?
So, Nank is the logical in. Lynch, if he's fit, if he's over the concussion issues, if he's out of the protocols, they're the main two. It's just whether or not we want to actually make any more changes. Do we give Fall a rest and bring in LaFau or Fawcett or Blight? Does Sonzi get in? I mean, I saw some comments.
Surely Sonzi comes in.
But I've seen some comments about he looked pretty defeated after the game when asked about his current situation and contract for next year. It seems that he's being phased out just based on body language and his responses. So I'm not sure if they like they've stamped Sonzi's papers as done and just aren't going to bring him in. Could even potentially see Juddy Clark if we want to. I still think that's a little too early. Same as LaFau.
He's played four games.
Yeah, I can't see too many changes. Nick, probably not. Given the time of the game, I think it's a 3 or 4 o'clock game.
I think we're 4:10. I believe that the club were looking at ways to get him to play the VFL game, which is at 12:10, I think. Yeah. But they had to make sure that all the flights home, there's no delays, there's no nothing, which I know you can't guarantee. So I'm not sure they'll even roll with it, to be honest, because of the risks attached.
I definitely think he'll play VFL. That, you know, 3 and a bit hours, he should be back by 7 o'clock if it's an hour plane ride from there. But definitely not at AFL level. By the time the game finishes, about 7:30 with the hour plane ride, 8:30 plus the half an hour wait, plus check in and check out at baggage at Melbourne Airport, plus getting home from the airport on a weekend, just won't be home in time for 10 p.m. So, yeah, you definitely won't be playing AFL level this week. I can't see many changes other than that.
So Ken, he can leave Victoria. He just has to make sure he's back home by 10 o'clock at night. Wherever he goes during the day, I don't think matters so much. It's making sure that he is back inside his own house at that point in time.
So the only interstate options for Bolt are really Adelaide or Sydney, given they're about an hour each way.
And yeah, it'd have to be the day games.
Yeah, it has to be one exactly. Or two.
Right, so the Giants are going to be tough to beat. There's no two ways about it. Their midfield scare me greatly with Callum Ward and Tom Green, Toby Bedford, who could do a tagging job on Taranto and potentially shut him out. Their backline also scares me with Sam Taylor, Lockie Whitfield, Lockie Ash is a gun, and I'm super grateful to you for making me put him in my draft team. But if we have a too inexperienced forward line, I just can't see us being able to kick a big enough score for this. I mean, again, we might defend okay. Hogan's going to be a handful, as is Toby Green, like always, and Cadman. But is there anything that you can see us doing change-wise, game-style-wise, matchup-wise, anything to knock off the Giants over in Sydney?
The one thing we need to do is really get stuck into Sam Taylor. Like, I don't know who it is. If we just bring in Nank and just sit him in the goal square all game, and just his only, you know, instructions are body the hell out of Taylor, hurt him, like really get stuck into him, because we don't want to be in the same situation as we were last week. Obviously, Sam Taylor is infinitely better than Ben McKay as a defender. So
yeah,
we don't want to have another repeat situation of just constantly coming in. If Lynch is in, it's Lynch's job to just niggle, aggro, like get stuck into him, like make him reserved. Piss him off. Make him play on the edge, because if he's just going to have a field day with the ball coming in and intercepting, it's going to be rough. We also need to shut down Whitfield and Ash. They're the main drivers through the midfield. I think we have to back our back line. Obviously, we do that every week, but one of their players is going to get off on the leash. It's bound to happen at some point. Jesse Hogan always has a really good game against us. Annoyingly, I think he's with his combination of athleticism, leading patterns, and strength, he's a hard matchup for a lot of our defenders. Yeah. So again, it's really keep them under 80 points.
That's the magic potion. I like it.
Yeah. It's really just try and half contest. They're probably going to outmuscle us all over the ground, given their list profile, their size. It's just trying not to lose each contest really badly.
Midfield's been a big issue for us in terms of stoppages, and they're a fairly strong stoppage side. They've got some big boys in there. Are there any other things we can do to try and mitigate how badly we might get smashed in there? Because like we were sort of talking about the other week, that sometimes it's not even about the number of stoppages. It's about the quality of the exit of the stoppage that can be what hurts you more. Because even in our really good years, we would often lose stoppages, but we would still smash teams because we were able to make it a scrappy kick in. How can we get back to doing something like that?
It's up to the midfield to be able to read the taps well, lock the ball in. I think Nank needs to take some responsibility with his ruck work for that. I do think Nank, his ruck work hasn't quite been up to the standard as it has been over the last few years, and he's been getting sharked a lot more. And he got sharked frequently throughout his career. It's always been like that. But the results of him being sharked over the past 18 months have been significantly worse, because we don't have someone like Trent Cotchin filling that defensive side of the contest hole and running, you know, into block that dangerous space. I do think we need to structure up a little bit differently rather than trying to win the clearance or the contest. Try and halve it. Like, obviously, with their midfield coming up against ours, you know, Tom Green, Callahan, if Callahan is back in.
He's still out.
Yeah, but with their Canelio players like that, I do think we're likely going to lose more contests in the midfield than we win. It's just about making sure that the wins that they get aren't to the quality of what Essendon were doing to us, North Melbourne were doing to us as well. It's if we can get them to start handballing out wide rather than carving through the midfield and kicking forward into Hogan leading up the guts, that'll go a long way as well. Forcing them out wide from the contest.
It's going to be a fascinating game. And people put in about Camden McIntosh could also be on watch too after he had a couple of ankle rolls. Ben Miller copped the knock as well, as did Vlosten. So there could be a couple of question marks on players heading in. But off the 9-day break, hopefully they've all got a good enough rest and can, all get out there. But with that all being said, what is the final tip, including margin, for this one against the Giants? Chuck him in chat as well. We'll put up some of the margins too. What are you thinking, Grok? How much are we winning by?
I've been pretty good at my margins last week.
Yes, you were.
So I'm going to go Giants by 36. I think it'll be a comfortable enough win for them.
Yeah, I'm the most nervous about this game that I have been for a long time, just in what it could end up looking like. I'm glad this is off a 9-day break and this wasn't the one off the 5-day break. But they're a talented outfit. There's no two ways about it. And look, if we get done by 40 or 50 points, it's probably an accurate enough reflection of where both teams are at, and we shouldn't be shitty or disheartened by that because they're a very good side and we're still learning and developing. If we can somehow keep them under 80 points, it makes things really interesting. Hopefully it pisses rain up there. I don't know. We just need something to happen to give us a bit of a chance. But I'll say the Giants by, 30 to 40 points. But you know what? Stranger things have happened. I guess you kind of think back to the Suns game where we were all but counted out of that and we show up strong, play for 3.5 quarters and get the win. So I guess in that regard, there's no reason why it can't happen again. It's just a matter of can we turn things around from last week from a stoppage perspective. We've got to lay tackles inside 50 and we've got to clean up our disposal efficiency going inside our own 50, because if we blast away, they're going to cut everything off and just waltz it out too quickly. That's not good. 20 degrees and sunny on Saturday. Yeah, damn it.
I was just thinking we need a weather report. If we are getting belted, I just hope we don't drop our heads and the effort drops off. Just... again, we're gonna get smashed by certain sides, given the list profile. It's just about effort. You don't want to roll over and expose your underbelly, and make it easy for them. So again, like 36 points. But if it gets ugly, I just want to see effort and intensity for four quarters.
Exactly right. We will try and do a live show for this one. I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to go on the home front trying to get this over the line, but it could be a double head-to-head one because we've got the VFL at the start rolling into the AFL, but I'll suss that and see how we go. But Grok, thanks for jumping on tonight, mate. Appreciate it. Thank you to everybody for tuning in from wherever you are. Make sure you get around us on all the socials, like and subscribe and everything like that. We've still got stubby holders available if anyone's keen as well. There's Grok sporting there tonight. Very good. But yeah, we appreciate all the love and support, all the interactions. It's good fun. And, hopefully Wednesday night when we do the live selection show, I'll double-check with him, but I'm pretty sure Tiggs is coming on. And I saw a few people asking about him earlier, and basically he's going well, and it's just he jumped on it for a couple of shows, but it was just a bit too much having multiple people all talking, doing stuff at once. It was just a bit much for his brain. So I said to him, look, let's get you on in a one-on-one setting. That way you can give us an update on how he's going personally, his thoughts on Richmond. I truthfully don't know if he's got any trade stuff. To be totally honest, I don't really care if he does or he doesn't, because it's more about him getting himself right and his health. And I know his mates think the same way, which is good. We'll hopefully have him on Wednesday night, so keep an eye out for that. But otherwise, watch all the draftee videos, the Louis Callaway and the Archie Daffy one, because there's some good talent coming through. But we appreciate the love and support. And until next week, go Tigers.
Go Tigers. And Jones Racing? No doozy. It's just Pasito tonight.
No, I just do need the doozy. I need to find that.